Welcome to another episode of the CTO to CTO podcast. In today's Challenge Accepted series, Piotr speaks to Christoph Gerber about the challenges of building a successful enterprise software startup. Christoph, the CEO of TalonOne, talks about what makes the platform stand out from other marketing tools on the market, like being able to manage customer loyalty and rewards all in one place on an enterprise scale. Christoph also founded one of the biggest German takeaway delivery startups, Lieferando, and shares his personal insights on building diverse teams, investments, and the need to reinvent your business in order to stay relevant on the market. Let's begin.
Today my guest is Christoph Gerber, founder of TalonOne. Before TalonOne, he founded Lieferando.de, then successfully merged with Takeaway.com. I can't wait to ask Christoph about his professional career, what drives him, and what did he learn along the way. Hi Christoph, thank you for accepting my invitation.
Hi Piotr, thanks for having me on the call.
Okay, so first let's get back a little bit to the 2009. It's the year you founded the Lieferando.de. How it all started?
Basically, I was in uni and my friend Kai and Jörg reached out to me and said, hey, we got this idea for a food delivery platform that works well in New York. Yep. And I was just like, whatever gets me out of uni, I'm all in. So at that point, we had no idea around how big food delivery can become. We really weren't interested in, or for me at least, I wasn't interested in, oh, this is how the market's going to develop. There's a general trend to food delivery. I was just like, whatever gets me out of uni fast, I'm all in.
So have you had any specific future plans back then? Did you expect Lieferando to become such a success?
Not really. I mean, if you look at the first business plan that we wrote, it actually says that we're in Cologne 4 years later.
Yeah.
So a city. So I think I was always more conservative around being successful. If you ask Kai and Jörg, they're a bit more bullish on this can become big. I was always skeptical, but I'm in general a very skeptical person, I would say.
Pragmatist.
I'm just more like, I rather think, in general notion, I think everything will turn out okay, but I'm not a person who thinks everything is going to be great. So I don't think it, I never thought it's becoming a, it will be a disaster, but I rather under-promise and over-deliver. And that's also for my personal view on the world. I rather don't get too excited and then be surprised than thinking about having, or like lying to myself, thinking I have a big, big successful business when it might not become that successful.
Gotcha. Low expectations can only surprise you the positive way. It makes perfect sense.
100%.
Okay, so you started this this company, as you said, a little bit accidentally, but there must be this moment that you found out it is a hit. It got the traction. When was it? What was that moment?
I think it really became obvious when Delivery Hero started in the German market afterwards, and we could see that there's more interest in the market to food delivery, and we started the merger talks with Delivery Hero and Takeaway. That I think for me was the point where I was like, okay, maybe there's something bigger here. Maybe we have there's a pathway to becoming really, really successful.
That's interesting. To grow the company, B2C company, food delivery, a lot of logistics, people to hire. I imagine you needed to find a funding, a solid partner. What were your criteria searching for an investor?
I mean, at the beginning, just when we started raising, it was just after the financial crisis. We really had problems raising our first money, and the first money we got was 150,000 euros. Yep. That was our first funding round. So if you think about 150,000 now, that's nothing.
It's nothing.
The pre-valuation that TalonOne, not the TalonOne, that Lieferando had, the initial, like the first round, and that was, we already built a working prototype. Not good, but we already transmitted orders.
Gotcha.
And the valuation was 700,000 euros.
Yeah.
That's the first valuation. So nothing compared to what we have now. Mm-hmm. So we were really scrambling to get 10,000, 30,000 euros from individual investors. Going forward, we were always competing against Delivery Hero. And Delivery Hero did an incredibly good job in raising money and building out a story, which we didn't do very, very well. Mm-hmm. We were not good fundraisers. So at that point, we basically took money from whoever would money give to us. Very, very different to how I would do it now, or how am I doing it now with Talon One. But we didn't have the luxury to really choose who we want to work with. All the big VCs rejected us.
Gotcha.
Index rejected us. Exa rejected us. Highland Capital rejected us. Bessem, everyone. You name a big VC in Europe, they rejected Talon. They rejected Lieferando, and the only one who kind of believed in us was Macquarie Capital, mm-hmm. which is an Australian investment bank, and they are, I would say, a key success factor to the IPO and everything that happened afterwards.
Gotcha. I remember those times. Actually, we started Divanta with my brother Tom around it, and we also were working on the first product, which was, you know, for a knowledge management kind of enterprise wiki, and it was also a failure. It was very tough to, you know, to find any investors, and after the crisis, everyone were cutting the costs, so you can imagine. What is a key to success in this kind of, you know, delivery business?
I think what we did well, because we didn't have so much money, was really the focus we put on product and on operations. As an example, I think when we merged with Takeaway, the German marketing team was 6 or 7 people. Mm-hmm. The equivalent team for Delivery Hero for the German market was around 40. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, what we excelled in. Was just going down into every single number. We like really putting a lot of work into our business intelligence, mm-hmm. and making decisions based out of that, mm-hmm. and really looking at every single customer cohort, how to make that cohort more profitable.
Gotcha.
And rather saying we compromise on growth for good numbers. So not taking every possible customer, but really thinking around what makes sense. And another thing that we did, I think, which made us a bit different at that stage, I think by now everybody's doing it. We didn't look at Germany as a market. Mm-hmm. We looked at each postcode. Each in Germany, postcodes are, I think in Poland, they're very, very narrow. In Germany, they're a bit bigger. Mm-hmm. So we looked at each postcode as a market. We said, how do we perform in each single market? So we had, I don't know, 10,000 markets, or let's, I don't know, 3,000 in Germany that we looked at. And these were the markets that we wanted to win. So we took the whole thing to a very, very granular level. Mm-hmm. I think that's very common now at that. I think, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, this was very new, the way we looked at things.
That's very interesting. So a lot of scrutiny in the process.
Very, very detailed. Very detailed. And I mean, one thing is, if you reduce a marketing team to 7 people, what we could see was that the output was actually better, because if you have some 5 people in display advertising, and you give them a budget, they run to all the companies and ask for offers. Mm-hmm. Instead of, if you reduce the team, they would go to the 3-4 companies they would already know they would get the best offers from. So the output was the same or even better, because we achieved it in lesser time.
Absolutely. That's a good point. Do you think that there is one single feature of your character that let you build this company and make it successful?
I think if I would have built it myself, it would have been a big failure. I think it's always a mix of characters. Mm-hmm. And I know where I'm really good at, but I would say my weaknesses are way bigger than my strength. It was great that I had Jörg and Kai with me, who were really complimentary. Mm-hmm. So each of us is a very different person. If you know us three, we are very, very different, all of us. Mm-hmm. And that was what made the company successful.
Gotcha.
That we were not three McKinsey guys, but very, very different.
Yeah, that good point. That was.
And it's the same. It's the same for Talon One now. My co-founder Sebastian at Talon One, he's a very, very different person to me, from a character, from the way he does things. And Talon One wouldn't be where it is right now without having such a strong co-founder, who basically does all the work that I really suck at.
Yeah, that was also very humble answer. So I think that maybe
it's true. I think Talon One would be a failure if I would do it myself. But Lieferando wouldn't exist if I would have done it myself.
Gotcha.
Not a chance in the world.
Gotcha. So from what we already. What was already said here, you are kind of, humble pragmatist with a lot of attention to details, which, makes pretty good profile for successful entrepreneur, I guess. Cool.
let's see.
Yeah.
Done it once, I have to do it twice to confirm that I'm not a one-hit wonder.
Okay. Eventually you merge with takeaway.com. How it all goes?
So from a financial perspective, it was the best decision we could have made. For me, it became clear at that point that the company was on a track to become so big that I didn't enjoy working there anymore. Mm-hmm. I actually enjoy working on product and grinding and like figuring out solutions. Yeah. If you look at food delivery, it's a process business, and I couldn't see myself keep focusing on these products.
Gotcha.
On the product on the process level. If you look at the website now, I mean, most of the stuff is still the stuff that we did back then. Then obviously there's a lot of stuff happening in the background, which I would say I don't enjoy anymore. And it becomes so big that I didn't see myself being in a leadership position in there. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha, absolutely. So after the exit, you invested into a few startups. What was your criteria?
So I started investing because I think everybody who made a bit of money in any kind of startup city or scene starts investing because he thinks that's what you should do. Mm-hmm. I actually then figured out I don't really enjoy startup investing. Mm-hmm. Really, in the last couple of years, I haven't invested basically at all in startups. What I do now is I have two friends who I invest with. So if they invest, I do the same amount that they do, but I don't do any due diligence and any kind of detailed analysis. It's like if these two guys invest together and then I just say, okay, you have a blank. You do whatever I do whatever you guys do, and they get all the rights for my shares, so they can do all the legal work and everything. And I don't want to be involved. Mm-hmm. I figured that if I look back at what I did, what were the companies that I invested in that were successful? Is basically the companies that I don't need to help. So the companies that where I see the founders are so strong and so talented that I can't help them, that's the companies where I actually invested a lot of money. And that's with the companies that are successful. I think most of the people that invest in companies do that with the criteria, oh, I can help them. I have industry expertise. I can add a lot of value. I think if you want to add value to an investment, that's already the wrong approach. You should invest in companies that don't need your help. That's my thesis.
Or found another company by yourself.
I think the biggest value creation is actually, yes. If you're just looking from a financial return, is building your own company. That's where you make the most money. And I don't take pleasure in investing and being involved in a lot of small companies or a lot of other startups. So I think the main criteria why you should invest in startups is if you enjoy working with a lot of different companies, a lot of different topics. It's just not something I enjoy. If I have time, I'd rather go hunting, go to the outdoors, go into the forest, work on my cars, but not worry about startups.
Gotcha. So this is how the idea of founding Talon One came up?
No, so Talon One basically came out of Lieferando. We built a Lieferando version on a Talon One version one at Lieferando because we had to compete on a better level with Delivery Hero in terms of promotions, and there were promotions all over the place. And what I've seen is that we actually always build promotions on a use case base. Mm-hmm. So we went to the development team and said, we want this and that. Then this feature was delivered, and 2 weeks later, we needed a different version of that mm-hmm. feature. And then it has to go back to the dev team and took another 6 weeks. And when I left, when we started thinking about Talon One, that was in 2015. That was way before the whole headless, Lieferando was already running on a microservice architecture. I think we're quite early due to our brilliant CTO, who is now the CTO of Tier, the Tier app, the mobility company. He was the one just saying, this is the way to go. And so we started with a microservice architecture actually in 13. So I think that was mm-hmm. quite early. And my basic idea was there has to be a promotion API out there. You start doing everything with external APIs. You have an AWS, you have an Optimizely, you have a Snowflake, you have a Redshift. You have everything becomes an API first approach. So why is there no backend solution or an API solution for the promotion engine? And this basically was my thesis, that we have to build this ourselves and sell this to big enterprises.
Gotcha. That makes perfect sense. You can give us a short overview what Talon One is. Like, I personally know, but I guess some of our listeners may be not aware of. So if you can give us a brief overview, would be perfect.
Yeah, so what Talon One basically is in a nutshell, is a rules engine focused on promotions. And if we look at promotions, we think about, or we at Talon One think about, referral marketing, product bundling, gift cards, wallets, loyalty programs, customer ledgers, easy discounts, product coupons, vouchers, and again, referral scheme. And mm-hmm. we think you can't separate those things. Yep. Maybe you have a coupon that works as a referral coupon, but ultimately adds loyalty points, and when you enter the coupon, also gives you a product bundle. So we see you can't separate all of those things if you want to make it really work and move away from very easy 10% discount with a coupon. Mm-hmm. And this is what we've been building for 5 years now.
Isn't it like the e-commerce platform already have promo engines? Like,
yeah, I would say everyone has their own promotion engine already.
Exactly.
But it's really the question, is it good enough? Mm. And if you're just starting your business and you're like a 10-person company, Talon One might be way too big for you and you don't need the capabilities. Yeah. If you think about an enterprise level traffic and enterprise level of amounts of campaigns you have to run, where you need version control, where you need complete audit, where you need to have mm-hmm. an audit trail mm-hmm. around what's happening, et cetera, where you need to have different departments working on different campaigns and they cannot overlap, and you have to create rules around which campaign can be fired when, depending on a region, different currencies, it becomes very, very complex.
Absolutely,
So I would say, in Magento, for example, they have basic CRM solutions. Mm-hmm. Internally, you can send in a CRM email through Magento to all the customers. I doubt any serious business is using that.
Of course,
And this is what I would say is where Talon One comes in. You can run promotions, yes, if you're really serious about running promotions on a highly effective, good return base, you have to move away from your existing, let's say, call it shitty legacy system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. So in other words, what makes Talon One special is the ability to work at, you know, enterprise scale, meaning not only performance, but also all the edge cases they have. Like, as you said, internationalization, multi-store, very flexible rules, engine, and so on. Would you like to add something to this, like what makes it special?
Yeah, it's basically that we can, I mean, if you look at the customers that we work with, it's very, very flexible. I would say we can cater for nearly, or we haven't really encountered a problem that we can't solve on a promotion, in the promotion space. And we solve with the same engine, we run all promotions for a Ticketmaster in the US, a Burger King in the US, but also a Zipcar, which is a car sharing company, or Office Depot in the UK, or JD Sports in the UK. Yep. So it's from fashion to office supplies, to car sharing, to food, to in-store food, to ticketing. Mm-hmm. It's the same system. And we solve all the quests, all the promotional issues for them with one solution.
I think that the API first approach you guys have is great, because it's not only about headless or microservices, but it's also, or maybe even foremostly, about inviting other parties to the product ecosystem you are building. What are the most important players in this ecosystem for Talon One?
I mean, we are kind of agnostic, I would say. Mm-hmm. We don't really care who we work with. We see there are a couple of clients that we work well with. One is, for example, View Storefront, which comes out of your space. Then we got Commerce Tools, which works great with Talon One, but also the likes of a Braze or Iterable and Particle Segment. Mm-hmm. These are all companies that we work closely with in the past, and that we like engage nearly on a daily level, where we are either, in the Commerce Tools example, we are replacing the internal promotion engine.
Gotcha.
For Braze, we trigger communication, or Braze is pulling coupon codes and promotion campaigns out of Talon One and inserts them into their communication. Mm-hmm. And then you got Segment and Emparticle, who enriches the Talon One database around customer segments and customer behavior. Mm-hmm. So they can say, this customer is part of a segment A, and therefore he gets a different set of discounts.
Gotcha. Makes perfect sense. So a lot of synergies. How about the adoption of the product? Do you need to educate the market? Because I'm asking because, you know, it's different from this typical approach we just discussed, that you have this simple but just working out of the box marketing engine inside your CRM or platform, and here you have something you need to integrate, maybe it's not, you know, difficult to understand for marketing guys how this adoption looks like.
And what we see is what happens mostly is that you have a development team, product team, and marketing team sit together discussing, we need to really rework our promotion engine, and then somebody goes out and starts looking for what's in the market. And if you're serious about your promotion engine, the only relevant company in the market is Talon One. Mm-hmm. And then you reach out to us, and then we see how we can help you. And this is normal. Like, this is, I would say, 95% of our growth comes from people reaching out to us saying, hey, can we please use your product?
Yeah. Gotcha. So it's not that tough. That I found it. Like, that's perfect. Can you tell us about your most interesting use case, the one you are most proud of for Talon One?
I would say the most impressive one for now at the moment is with COVID, that Ticketmaster had to cancel all their concerts in the US and Canada, and you got concert cash. Mm-hmm. So basically you got a credit.
Yep.
From Ticketmaster for your concert. But the company that actually is handling that credit and that has the wallet and the ledger for that customer is Talon One.
Okay.
So we hold over $1 billion in ticketing credit for Ticketmaster.com.
Amazing.
And that shows you kind of how well we integrated into our customers and how far we actually have come, that a company as big as Ticketmaster, Live Nation, trusts us with that much of their core business.
That's really amazing. Congratulations on this case. It's really cool. What are the growth barriers for you as a company, for Talon One as a product?
I don't really see, I would say, growth barriers. It's, again, how do you scale growth? And I think we're quite comfortable where we are right now. I've done the hockey stick crazy race with Lieferando. And now for us, it's really to keep on delivering a great product, to keep on delivering value to the customer. And at the moment, I think we achieved something that every customer we have would be a customer testimonial to us.
Gotcha.
And this is what is most relevant to us.
Gotcha. So it's more about, you know, sustainable, organic growth, building relationships.
I think a good company will always find its purpose, and we don't need the hyper growth anymore. We've done that.
You don't need to show anyone that you are capable of doing these things. You already did it. Okay, let me switch to more general questions. I always ask the same questions, never got the same answer twice. So how do you see the future of e-commerce enterprise software market?
I mean, I posted a LinkedIn post yesterday with SAP being shredded on the stock market yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think it will move more and more to players like the commerce tools and additional software like View Storefront, Talon One, specialized communication platforms. Mm-hmm. So we will have more an orchestra of best of breed, mm-hmm, instead of an SAP Hybris Commerce Cloud monolith, mm-hmm, which they pretend is moving into a microservice architecture. But I think just from design and the way they handle things will eventually die. And I shared one note. We spoke to SAP once because we had a customer who was running, or a potential customer who was running on SAP Commerce Cloud, wanted to integrate Talon One. And the Hybris management actually said to us, we cannot integrate you or really help you because we can't give the customer the impression that Talon One delivers a better value on the promotion part than the Commerce Cloud does. Mm. So I think that just shows you a general problem with these big players. I would say they are arrogant in my point of view, and eventually it will not survive. Mm-hmm. At least not for the product. I mean, they will always survive, they will always be big, but the product can't hold up. The speed and the quality they deliver, and the way they just try to sell big products with less and less value, yep, will change the landscape dramatically.
Gotcha. Thank you. Usually we got here opinions about some tech trends and, you know, this kind of stuff. But I really appreciate this answer. Not saying that I, you know, maybe fully agree with that, but it's from business perspective. So it makes a lot of sense. And in my recent talk with Adam Sturok, founder of Molting, he also shares his view on this. He created this landscape of how the e-commerce platforms are doing, how they are tweaking this, legacy you just said about. Very interesting one. Thank you.
So just adding to that, I don't think they will ever die. And they're just too big to that. But what they will do is eventually buy someone else to become top of the curve again. And then they will screw that up. And then they will buy the next one to be top of the game again. I think the whole way of software, mm-hmm, development is more and more commoditized. So what you needed, an SAP like 10 years ago or 20 years ago, is not something you need anymore. It's basically like an Oracle. The only reason why Oracle is still so big is because it's such a pain to remove them out of your system. It's not that they're the best, and I would probably say it's the same for SAP. It's not that they're the best in what they do. They're just the biggest, have the best sales team, and are already integrated everywhere, and that's why people keep using it.
Yeah.
But are they delivering the best value for money?
Mm-hmm.
100% not.
Isn't it like this is just a fate of this technology adoption life cycle? You know, this bell curve that you have this chasm and then you are approaching the majority of users and so on. Because I this is how I see it, you know. It's usually takes like 7-10 years. If you look at the other players in the market, at some point you are so big that you are just, you know, getting out of the market by having pretty legacy stuff. But then, if you are smart enough, brave enough, and have significant market power, they all have, the leaders, they can redefine themselves. I think that this is the way they can be still, you know, feasible.
But I think at one point the size of your organization just hinders you from redefining yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that in your DNA, let's say in Amazon,
mm-hmm.
If you don't have that as a corporate DNA, and I doubt SAP has it, then it's really hard to re-innovate yourself. And what people do is they buy
mm-hmm.
to compensate for internal structures. But that's my personal take on it. I think we will, SAP will always be there. But it's not that we will see cutting-edge innovation coming out of SAP. I think that time is over. There will be no innovation coming out of SAP, no matter what they say.
I'm a little bit more optimistic, you know. They are doing great stuff, too. So I think that, you know, it probably depends. But they are doing great stuff, too. Okay, what are your goals for the next years? What are your goals for the, you know, next year and next 3 years?
I would say no clearly defined goals, just keep what we're doing, becoming the promotion backend for more and more enterprises. We got a couple of great customers in our pipeline, but I would say you will never hear us shouting about it very loud. We just try to be in the background. We never want to touch your customer. And if nobody knows we're there, we're happy. We're happy if we're just that small promotion backend from Berlin. And that's good enough for us.
Makes perfect sense. Thank you for our conversation. It was great talking with you, Christoph. Yeah, perfect. Guys, if you have any more questions to me or Christoph, please post them and we will try to answer. And please post them in the comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the CTO to CTO podcast. If you enjoyed this show and if you found this episode useful and informative in any way, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This can help us tremendously in reaching other listeners who might also be interested in these topics. And of course, as always, we'll be back with great content next week.